Hello there. Welcome back to Ladies Can We Talk? So appreciate you tuning in. And I hate singing over Krista Branch, who is the one who provided this music for the show. It's wonderful music. It just captures the spirit of the show so much. Okay, so welcome to second hour of Ladies Can We Talk in our roundtable. I have my leading ladies here, Lori Medina and Chris Davis.
Hi.
Hi there. Hi. And I believe we already have on the phone Meryl Hope. Hi, Meryl.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Just great. You know, Meryl, I told our listeners before the break, in fact, at the start of the show, I was mentioning also that we're just going to focus on two stories tonight. And we talked a lot in the first hour about the Paris attack, the Islamic attack in Paris. And then this hour, I really want to turn to this University of Missouri protest. And Meryl Hope is a great writer on Breitbart. If you don't read Breitbart, it's one of the best websites on the web. Not as good as Ladies Can We Talk, but besides that, it's a great website.
Meryl's fantastic.
Yeah. And you've written a lot about education. And so I think a lot of Americans are watching this protest. In fact, I'll tell you, Meryl, when we first saw this massive protest starting, our first reaction was, wow, must have missed something that happened at Mizzou. Something horrible must have happened to bring about this protest. But I haven't found it so far. So, I mean, you've been working on this story and watching it. So tell us what you've learned about this protest.
Well, I should also say that Breitbart itself has covered these in almost real time over the past week, these protests. And what you come to find out is you got a lot of kids who claim to be broke that come from very wealthy families. No evidence seems to be showing up, but they sure got a lot of demands, don't they?
Unbelievable demands. And, you know, I actually saved it for you to listen if you want, but there's a million student march hashtag now on Twitter, and you can just tell our listeners the three things they're demanding, if you want to.
Well, they were demanding, first of all, free college for all. They were also demanding the complete disillusionment of, you know, dissolving all the existing debt, college loan debt on Earth in this country. And they're also demanding $15 an hour minimum wage for campus workers. But some of the marches have gotten into bed with pro-Palestinian groups. So you'll also see, and in Texas, there were two colleges. There were three universities in Texas that did partake in the march. University of Texas at Austin, Texas State San Marcos, and a little college, I believe it's called Angelina College in Lufkin in East Texas. And not UT, but the other two did coordinate their events with a pro-Palestinian group demanding, as did many other major universities in California, at UMass, you know, in Amherst, that they want the universities to divest out of Israel. Now, what UT did differently was they got a whole gun-free Texas, you know, UT gun-free thing going. So they went that route. They did not join with the pro-Palestinian groups.
I have to say, Meryl, everything you're describing, it's so disassociated, or just it just seems like it's almost a protest mentality and just latching on to any gripe they can think of. I mean, they're not even really connected. And I will say for our listeners, there may have been some personal incidences at University of Missouri where if maybe someone treated someone else with disrespect, but there wasn't some massive, horrible racial incident. But it's like this, we've infused these kids with just the right to protest and almost an afterthought, wait, what is it we should protest this week? Do you think that's fair or not?
Well, I think what's fair to say is it doesn't start in college. I think when many of us went to college, our parents would say, you send your kid to school, you get a radical. But it started in the college years. We're no longer living in a time when you send your kid to college and you get a radical. You send them to pre-K, you're getting a radical, because the ideology of how they teach the children today, that's all based on a social and emotional learning model. And this has been going on, I know everyone loves to blame Common Core, but this has been going on previous to Common Core.
Mm-hmm. Can you give some examples of that? I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I would just love to have you explain what you mean by that term, social and emotional.
Emotional.
Yeah.
The social and emotional is more of feelings-based learning. It's what people get upset with when they talk about Common Core. Now, the problem is we lump everything into Common Core, and then the experts say, well, it's not Common Core. It's like in Texas. There's no Common Core in Texas, but there is college and career readiness, which is still built on the same modality of social and emotional learning. And down in San Antonio, down in Austin, the universities, they're pumping this stuff right into the school systems. Up here in North Texas, Prosper ISD had some expert come in from another state. I don't know if she got here because we had an ice storm. This was last winter.
God intervened. No, go ahead.
Who knows? But the point being that we're no longer teaching on a academic basis. Everybody, mm-hmm. there are so many names for the same thing, or a traditional classical education where you what was more important was what you learned, fact-based, knowledge-based, academic-based, whatever you want to call it. Today, it's more about how you feel, mm-hmm. how you feel. And, you know, you hurt my feelings. And basically, we teach moral equivalence. Mm-hmm. We don't teach right and wrong. I had the great, I don't know whether it's a misfortune or fortune, to have sat through a major one of these kinds of conventions in two instances. One was at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley in California, and one was at South by Southwest last year in Austin. And when you hear what they're doing, you know, it's a philosophy that is about teaching children there is no right and wrong. My feelings matter as much as yours do. And, you know, anything goes. Well, how do you teach? How do you teach right from wrong? Now, the problem is they're doing a very good job teaching these kids how to act out, but they're not really teaching how to fit in. And all this stuff lately with microaggression, you know, you just can't hurt anyone's feelings. Or I think I even did a piece on costumes, Halloween costumes offending
right.
people.
Yes, I'm actually glad you raised that because, you know, this incident at Mizzou was one thing, but the Halloween costumes that was started at Yale,
mm-hmm.
and then there was another one that, did you, Meryl, you probably did see this story about Claremont McKenna College and the faculty, or she was a faculty or an administrator?
Dean.
Dean.
Yeah.
Had to resign?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because, did you see that story, Meryl?
Yeah.
I mean, that one really struck me because the dean was trying to be nice to this girl who was saying, I feel kind of lost here because I grew up in a majority Hispanic neighborhood. Now I'm at a school that, you know, Hispanics are not the majority. And all of a sudden I'm feeling kind of, and the dean tried to reach out. And we've told kids they can. And so the girl went on a hunger strike demanding the dean be fired. And so the dean quit the next day.
And this is a problem because the biggest problem that's coming from this is they're teaching the children about anarchy. You know, when I covered the McKinney pool party stuff that happened up here in North Texas, one of the things that I found astounding was, you know, they were trying to turn it into Ferguson, but they couldn't turn it into Ferguson, and they couldn't do it for several reasons. One, you had a 30-pastor coalition who anticipated this would happen, but there was another reason, despite public education, because that's a big problem, that they couldn't make this happen, and that was because people in Texas are living a very different life than they're often stereotyped to be living. They're living what Martin Luther King spoke about. Those neighborhoods were integrated. People all did well. You saw all kinds of political values and ethnic values, but people got along. So when the push came to shove to push it, and the best part was is they'd argue with each other, but then they would pray together, and that was the end of it. So you don't see that. And we reported on it because we felt it was important that people understood why Ferguson could not happen in McKinney.
So, Meryl, this is Lori. What do you think we should do with these whiny kids at Mizzou? What should we do with them? What's the solution here?
Well, the solution doesn't start in college, like I'm saying. It starts back in the public school system. And I know everyone doesn't want to blame they only want to blame Bill Gates, but Bill Gates is far from the only one at fault with what's wrong with public education. And the teachers' unions have a lot to do with it, or in Texas, I would say more TASA and TASB, which I write about all the time, lobbyists and unions. And the way teachers have been educated for 50 years to become teachers is very different than the teachers some of us had or our parents would have had. So it really is about an examination of stop reforming everything. For all this reforming, this is what you're netting.
Well, this is Chris, and, you know, I just was going to interject that, you know, you're so right. It's not about education anymore. It's not about fact-based. And, you know, you can go back to the self-esteem movement, mm-hmm. you know, way back. And so many of us grew up, our parents sent us to public school, and that was that. And we learned, we graduated, we went on and did life. Now education is a huge decision for parents, and it absolutely should be a big deal. I was at a dinner party Friday night, and a conservative friend talked about his two kids who were extremely liberal. And I thought about it, and I thought, public schools, mm-hmm. public universities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it used to be also that schools share the same values as the parents.
Good point.
They
wow.
don't.
Good point.
And I don't care how red the state is, the schools are blue.
Well, you know, and the thing is about the public school system is that a lot of parents, they say, well, you know, that may go on in other schools, but it doesn't happen in my school. And my school is so great. And, you know, and I feel like a lot of times parents, they feel like their facilities are very nice facilities. They're very clean. They have lots of resources, lots of technology.
Smiling teachers
that, you know, are kind to them and kind to their children. And so, therefore, they must have a quality education. And really, their examination of what happens with their children during those, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours doesn't go beyond the facilities and the smiling teacher. And so, Meryl, how do we wake up parents to examine past these two things?
That has been the most important question to ask, that yet no one, you know, until someone's child goes over the radar, they get in trouble, they suddenly get diagnosed with emotional disorder. You know, suddenly the teacher finds something wrong with them, and suddenly they have ADHD. This happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then suddenly parents wake up, and unfortunately people don't wake up until it happens to them. And I wish I could say, because I do, parents call me all the time, and, you know, organize parents, and you got to go to your board meetings. And parents will call me up in tears. No one will go with me, you know? And can you get one friend? That's a problem. I think also there is a middle ground that we have to be aware of, because some people get extreme, that everything is a problem, everything is an affront. Well, everything isn't. And there have been times when I have actually defended districts because they didn't do something wrong and people overreacted. And I think the more intensified it gets, the more overreactionary parents can get too, which is not always the best way to move forward. Not to say that their claims are not valid. I'm a parent too. So I understand personally, as a parent who I have public school, charter school, homeschool, public school, private school. I've done a lot of them, and I do empathize tremendously. But we still have to be intelligent and be fair-minded, because not everything they're doing is wrong. But when something wrong happens, parents need to organize and go to their school board meetings. Although here's the problem, and this for me is a huge problem. In Texas, you have a lot of people don't like charter schools because they don't have publicly elected school boards, and I understand that. You could throw the people who created it out. But what you do have here is you have a school board that are lobbyists. They mm-hmm. get elected, and then they're lobbyists, and then they're in love with their school administrators, the union, TASA. Mm-hmm. And you're not, and until parents realize, they sit there and they get frustrated, and they're on Facebook and they're talking amongst themselves. But I think at some point you have to say, I'm not happy. I don't know what my kid is learning. You as things become more technological, you will know less and less. So until two people, you don't need 1,000, you need two people, and then maybe a third will come and a fourth will come. And I wish I had an answer for you on that. I mean, what we try to do is inform so you understand what's occurring.
We are speaking with Meryl Hope, who is a writer at Breitbart. I don't know if you use the term investigative reporter, but that's what, to me, part of what you are, investigative reporter, journalist, a writer, a blogger.
Definitely.
Writing on Breitbart, focusing especially on education issues, and honestly, you've written so many great pieces. I believe I posted a link to your article that kicked off this conversation. Million student march demands free college now, emboldened by Mizzou protests. This, so we could probably spend hours talking about just the attitude students have acquired that is such a disservice to them. But I think we actually have to go off to a break instead. So, Merrill Hope, thank you for calling in for all your great insights.
Thanks, Merrill. Thank it was awesome.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have you again sometime, I hope, and thank you so much. This is Debbie. Bye-bye. It's Debbie Georgiadis. I can't say my own name. Debbie Georgiadis, Chris Davis, Lori Medina. Ladies, can we talk? 660 AM, The Answer. Come back after our break. We're going to talk a little more about education and a lot more about Paris, because I want us all to feel that we have a part in protecting America against a Paris happening here.
660 AM The Answer. 660amtheanswer.com.
The NCPA, National Center for Policy Analysis, America's think tank, is headed up by one of America's true conservative heroes, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Coming up in Dallas on Friday, December 4th, NCPA will host Leading Diverse Cities, three Texas women mayors leading the way in government, featuring mayors Beth Van Dyne of Irving, Betsy Price of Fort Worth, and Nelda Martinez of Corpus Christi. All three lead diverse cities, and all three are recognized as strong leaders who bring people together to solve Texas-sized challenges every city faces. This noon luncheon will be at the Dallas Addison Marriott Quorum, and Debbie Georgiadis, 660 AM host of Ladies Can We Talk, will moderate the forum. Go to ncpa.org for more information and tickets. Don't miss this chance to hear how women step up and lead in Texas. Join Debbie Georgiadis on December 4th for a luncheon and forum featuring ladies talking about leading in Texas. Get your tickets now at ncpa.org.
One day, we were like, hey, you know what would be great?
What's that?
A huge Christmas party this December. Let's say December 5th.
Fun!
Hey, you know who we should invite?
Ooh, how about Toby Mac? Call him!
So, we did. Dude, Toby, hey, call up some of your closest friends. We're throwing a party!
Yeah, we holla at you.
So, here is your official invite. Our sister station, 94.9 KLTY and Dallas Baptist University Concert Series, brings you Toby Mac. This is not a test. Saturday, December 5th at Verizon Theater with special guest Brent Nicole. Colton Dixon. And Holland. Get your tickets right now at AXS.com. For special discounted group tickets, hit up GetGroupTickets.com or call 844-381-4751.
Hi, I'm Tom Kidd, engineering graduate of Texas A&M and owner of Structured Foundation Repairs. Our number is 972-484-1200. Our motto is to do the right thing. In some respects, it's hard being the company that always does the right thing. But for our customers' sake, it's very important that we do. Being fully insured, as an example, costs us a lot of money, but it protects our customers. Having employees instead of day laborers is a huge responsibility, but our dedicated employees ensure that we do the best repairs we can. Managing a large office staff can be tedious, but they provide our customers a helpful voice when they need something urgent. Returning every phone call is time-consuming, but instills our customers with confidence that we will always be there when they need us. The Aggie Code of Honor states that Aggies don't lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those that do. That code was the principle our company was founded on, and it guides our daily operations. If this sounds like the kind of company you could trust to repair your foundation, call us today for a free evaluation at 972-484-1200 or click structuredfoundation.com.
Hey, this is George at the Filling Station DFW. A couple times a year, the Filling Station has the pleasure of hosting Reverend Paul Teske. Pastor Teske's traveled around the world teaching on Jesus and God's healing power. This coming Monday night at 7 p.m., Pastor Paul will teach about that, but he's also going to bring a special teaching on the Father's love. Question, how many of you have a strained relationship with your earthly father? Been hurt by him, rejected, felt unloved, or maybe you never knew him? This night's for you. Those wounds are going to be healed. You need to come. Now, maybe you have a splendid relationship with your father. That's great. He's going to also teach us how to better bless our children and the people that God's put in our lives. You're going to want to learn how to do this. Now listen, the Filling Station's set up for smaller gatherings. So if you come, you will be ministered to, guaranteed. For directions and more information, you'll need to go to thefillingstationdfw.com. That's thefillingstationdfw.com. Hope to see you there.
Hey, 3 hours a day is all I ask. Join me, Sean Hannity, from 2 to 5 each weekday right here on 660 AM, The Answer.
More of Ladies Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiatis right here on 660 AM, The Answer.
Hey there, welcome back to Ladies Can We Talk. We're in our second hour roundtable with my leading ladies, Lori Medina and Chris Davis. And we've talked the first hour a lot about Paris and what that means for America's future and security. And we just had a great call with Meryl Hope, who is a blogger, investigative reporter, just a wonderful writer and thinker on Breitbart.com. I urge you to go read her articles, Meryl Hope. And actually, we're going to take off here with a call. And we have a caller, and then we're going to take it from there. So, hello. I think it's Benjamin. Hi there.
Hi, Debbie. Quick comment real quick was about the terrorist attack. Obama, in his little speech, said that he would help France bring them to justice. And that, to me, tells me that he obviously does not get the problem, because it's not a criminal problem. It's a war, and he doesn't even want to see it as war. And typically, Democrats in general view it as a criminal problem, i.e. World Trade Center number one bombing.
Benjamin, that is such a good point. In fact, we were, you know, we were talking about, even after the real attack, the 9/11 attack on the Trade Center towers, the liberal response at first was the same thing you're saying, that President Obama is saying now is, we're going to find the bad guys and we're going to charge them with crimes and put them in front of a jury. And the rest of the world, and honestly, I think within America, the military was saying, no, this is an act of war. This isn't a crime like robbing a bank. I agree with you. And I think if you do see it just as a act of a crime, you're not you don't really see that Islam is in a war against America. Is that how you see
it? Other point, yeah, that's how I see it. Quick other point, France apparently sees it the exact same way, as this is war, because they're bombing Syria now. So apparently somebody over there got the point.
Yes, they sure did. In fact, you know, I meant to say to our listeners before we started this segment, we on Ladies Can We Talk, our Twitter handle is at Debbie Can We Talk, and we started using Periscope. So if you're a Periscope user, quick go to at Debbie Can We Talk, become connected with us on Twitter, follow us on Periscope. It's actually pretty fun, and people write funny comments sometimes. But back to Benjamin. Sir, I agree with you, and I think it is really, you know, it's kind of sitting in the abstract. Maybe someone sits back and says, well, we shouldn't start a war over this. But when it's your country, as in France now, your people, your police force, deaths in your city, all of a sudden you can tune into the real problem. And, you know, France has had struggles because their immigration system over the last decades has admitted more and more and more Muslims. And they have had, prior to this, whole areas, they call them arrondissements in French, it's just counties, where they do not permit French police to come, that the Islamic immigrants have really set up their own little communities. And so, yeah, France is struggling for to take back their country, really, from this kind of invasion. And this probably helped them see this as a war and not a police action. Benjamin, great call. Thanks for calling. Okay, so we're going to go. We've all been, it's fun to be in the studio. It's very fun to be in the studio because we can see each other. We did want to touch on one other thing about the Mizzou story, and it wasn't just Mizzou. It was, you know, University of Missouri, there was protests. As I say, you have to dig deep to find anything like an actual wrongdoing committed toward some of these students. But the outrage generated by it has caused this massive million-student march. Now it's spreading to other colleges, and you have colleges competing to be more offended, students who's more offended by something or other, to the point that you start to realize these kids are deeply, deeply self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. Life is about me, yep. Which led to some tweets after the Paris attack happened. And almost immediately, people in the world recognized Paris was, 158 people, I think, is the final death count, plus hundreds more injured. It was a horrific attack. And this was not like, you know, two warring Islamic groups killing each other. This is innocent citizens mm-hmm. trying to enjoy an evening out with their friends and family. Mm-hmm. And so, but the students at Mizzou were I mean, there's no other way to even say it, just so self-absorbed, so self-important that they began tweeting, complaining about the attention the media was giving to Paris because they, the Mizzou students, wanted to keep talking about how evil their life is. And as Meryl Hope pointed out, there's tons of stories about Mizzou, but these kids who are making the complaints are from wealthy families who many of them are just having a great life there. They're living in beautiful college, beautiful facility, fabulous resources, and complaining about the attention being given to Paris. So you know what we're going to do because we're learning our lesson here? We're going to go back to off to a break right now and so we are going to be on time, and then we come back. We're going to talk a little more about the long-term consequences of the failure to treat seriously what's happening in Paris and really what, as a country, it means for us in our future. So let's step off to our break right now, and we're on Ladies Can We Talk on 660 AM with my leading ladies, a second-hour roundtable, Lori Medina and Chris Davis. This is Debbie Georgiadis, and come back after our break.
AM, the answer. 660 AM, the answer.com.
This is Debbie Georgiadis, and Ladies Can We Talk? Have you noticed the new music on my show? I'm so excited about it, I can hardly stand it. The singer in the music, the bumper music for my show, is named Krista Branch, K-R-I-S-T-A, and the word branch. And her website is KristaBranch.com. And the reason I'm telling you this is that her music so captures the spirit of America, so captures the message of this radio show, that I really want to support her. So she's not paying for this ad. I'm just telling you that if you want to have fabulous, patriotic, inspiring, upbeat music at any event at your home, buy the music that Krista Branch records. Go to KristaBranch.com and you can order her music. I'll tell you my three favorites: I Am America, Remember Who We Are, and Can You Hear Us Now? Fabulous words, fabulous music. This is music that will lift everyone up and make you so happy to be American.
Do you have low back or neck pain? Does it run down your arms or your legs? Do you have a bulging or herniated disc, disc degeneration, or spinal arthritis? Even worse, have you been told you need back surgery or injections? If you answered yes, then please listen to what I have to say. My name is Dr. Chad Glines, DC, at Genesis Back and Neck, and I use the most advanced spinal decompression system available, the DRX 9000, to correct back problems just like yours. We don't use addictive drugs, and we don't use any type of dangerous invasive surgery for these problems. Spinal decompression is safe, FDA cleared, and it's not painful, and has about an 86% success rate. We accept most insurances, and your first visit will be at no charge. You will sit down and visit with me personally until I've answered all of your questions. And if you're a candidate for decompression, you can try out the treatment all at no charge to you. So if you're ready to not hurt anymore and don't want to have surgery, call me at 817-328-1922. That's 817-328-1922. Or online at mylowback.com.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story of how SelectQuote goes to bat for you buying term life insurance. A while back, a man called me who had had prostate cancer. He asked if I could beat a very high quote another life insurance agent had given him. I said, let me see. Well, I took his pertinent information, then shopped the highly rated, price-competitive companies we represent, and found one who pre-approved him for a premium way below what he had been quoted. When it comes to term life insurance, no other company touches SelectQuote's experience and expertise in finding the right policy at the right price for almost anyone. How about you?
For your free quote, call 1-800-500-5236. That's 1-800-500-5236. 1-800-500-5236. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save.
I remember the day when one of my best friends called and told me that his father had died. We cried together. This devastated his family. But even more devastating, they invested his death benefit in the stock market. And in the crash of 2008, they lost over $1 million. All of their hopes and dreams were shattered yet again. My name is Brent Tixon. After that market crash devastated my friend's family, I determined that would not happen to anyone else that I knew. After years of research, I did find a better way. So today, I'm giving you a free copy of my best-selling book, Secure Your Retirement Dreams with Safe Money. I reveal where the wealthy grow their money safely, get good rates of return, and get tax-free cash loans for retirement. All of this where you don't lose money in the market. If you're concerned about losing your hard-earned wealth in the next stock market crash, then call 1-800-391-0404 right now to get your free copy of Safe Money. The next 47 callers get free shipping and handling. No credit card required. Call 1-800-391-0404.
660 AM, The Answer.
866-660-5759 is the number to call with your question or comment. Back to Ladies Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiatis on 660 AM, The Answer.
Hello, welcome back to Ladies Can We Talk. You know, we've just started this new thing here. We got on Periscope, and so we think we're very trendy. But actually, if you are on Twitter, you can follow me at Debbie Can We Talk, and you have to be on Twitter to then use Periscope. And Periscope is live streaming. The three of us sitting here in the studio tonight doing this show is being live streamed at Debbie Can We Talk on Periscope. It's kind of fun. You get comments. No one needs a comment if you don't like our hairstyle or anything, but I mean, you get fun comments sometimes. So I hope you'll do that. And we're back to talking in this, you know, of all the issues that are facing America, dealing with radical Islam in the world is the most important, is the single most important issue facing the security and freedom of America and the rest of the free world. And so we want to be sure and cover, there's a lot of things to know about it. And then when you know them, you need to speak up and tell your friends and family. Because if you don't speak up and tell people, there are a lot of people who don't stay informed and they're not really aware of the risk. And then they might make a poor decision in the fall election cycle.
Debbie, I wanted to talk tonight about the Paris attacks and specifically what happened in the Bataclan. And for our listeners, I'm sure you all know, you've heard that word. That's the name of the theater where so many of the French people where they were, and they were just watching. Actually, it was the American rock band that was there. And that was where a lot of death occurred. A lot of terror occurred in that facility, in that venue. And a lot of the survivors, the people that came out of that that venue alive, several of them made the same comment. And I thought it was a very interesting comment, as they said that when they described what happened with the terrorists, they said, oh, and by the way, I don't want to call them terrorists. I want to call them sadistic murderers. Okay, can we just stop calling them terrorists? I want to call them sadistic murderers because that's what they are. Anyway, so these sadistic murderers were in there and they had their weapons and they were just shooting. I mean, just inches or feet away from the people, and they would shoot the people and they would then stop and reload and then they would shoot again. And the people made, the way they described it is they said it was like they were shooting birds. They were just, and the people would just kind of scatter and they would just kind of move around the room and they would just keep shooting and they would keep shooting. And the reason I describe that is because I feel like that is incredibly analogous to the way the West has been dealing with Islamic terrorism. I feel like that, you know, as long as they are shooting at somebody else, and I can scatter in the corner, I'm okay. As long as I can kind of move around quick enough away from the spray of the bullets, I'm going to be okay. And maybe that guy over there might get it, but I'm okay. You know, it's like the Western nations, we kind of just thinking, well, it's happening over there or it's happening somewhere else. It's not happening to us, but it is now happening. It is happening and has been happening, Debbie, for a long time to all of us. And I just think it's incredibly sick that President Obama is refusing to protect Americans. Sick.
I couldn't agree more. And I love that analogy. And, you know, we were talking before the show. We always sit around and kind of talk about the issues, talking about there have been similar attacks. And this struck America as a nerve with America because it's Paris and people do go there on vacation, special trips and college graduation, something very special. People go to Paris. Well, but the previous, was it the day or a couple of days earlier in Beirut, there was a large shooting again?
It was the day before. It was a suicide bomber, 43 people killed, hundreds injured. And yet that really didn't make the American press. They were too busy covering Mizzou and the whiny babies there.
Yep. You know, this is really important because Islam, and I don't have time to go into it tonight. I'm sorry, because I wanted to do it in the first segment, but I had actually a long history written out to point out the fact that Islam has been, from its inception, a religion of aggression, a religion of forced conversion of others, a religion of geographic expansion, a religion of forcing itself and spreading its influence as far as it can. So we were all of a sudden struck because, here we are seeing in the year 2015, Islam began in 600, whatever it was, AD, and Islam has always been aggressive. It's always done this. Mm-hmm. This is the latest battle. Mm-hmm. And so we hear deaths like Paris, and we're upset. But you mentioned Beirut. There were also, I want to mention Israel for a minute. Israel regularly is, now they're suffering from knife attacks, and they're regularly bombed, and they're regularly attacked by Muslims, by it happens in their case, we call them Palestinians, and that somehow gives them, in some people's view, special permission or a special excuse. But this is an aggression that's gone on for centuries, for actually the word is millennia, over thousands of years. And we have to be just as horrified when a Palestinian attacks a Jewish person as when a Islamic terrorist in Paris attacks a Parisian or an American student. We have to understand Islam is at war with Western civilization. This is just one battle among many that they're fighting right now.
You know, Debbie, after this attack in Paris, Netanyahu went on TV and made a magnanimous statement of support for the French people and mm-hmm. you know, being prayers for the families. And Israel is one that, you know, France has, the French government is always against Israel. And it's supporting this EU thing where they're going to label items bought or made in Israel. And, you know, that just almost to me smacks of putting a yellow star on those products.
It's bottom line anti-Semitic. Hey, that ties back for a minute to the Mizzou student protest when they first had signs up. One of the things the students wrote is, we demand removal of all Sabra, S-A-B-R-A, Sabra products. I'm thinking, what in the world is that?
Hummus.
Yeah.
It's made in Israel.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They want removal on campuses of everything made in Israel. This, I mean, I know I'm tying two subjects here, but this Mizzou thing is all about, I'm just going to find a reason to be outraged and make demands and be offended. And so from irrational attack on Israel to, you know, everything else that irrationals are doing. Yep.
Well, it also points out that the students are also aligning themselves, I saw, with Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. with the groups, with every progressive group bringing in the Palestinian question, which has nothing to do with their own demands. But it just shows that, you know, here's Alinsky, here's mm-hmm. George Soros, who's been funding Black Lives Matter. And as Meryl Hope said, it is taking us toward anarchy. And that may be the goal of some people.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I was going to say it was the last segment, but I want to make this point now. When President Obama was elected, and as we Americans watched what he did to our country, what he did to the fabric of the American society, this has been an administration determined on one front after the next to divide America, to instill anger, fear, hatred, division, resentment, distrust between and among Americans, between and among groups of Americans. There's been a concerted effort to convince young African Americans that the police are your enemy, that they're always out to get you, that police departments are just randomly deciding to kill innocent people. And because that obviously would invoke deep emotion and people say, oh my gosh, that's terrible, we have to stop this. You look at the facts, it's not, they aren't there.
And Debbie, if education is not fact-based anymore, but feeling-based, it's very easy mm-hmm. to lead these people along.
Yes, and on women, I want to make the point about women. The American left, Obama and his administration, have taken an issue out of thin air and made it the new right. It has to do with women on campus and alleging there is a campus rape culture. And so now young women are just worked into a frothing blather, believing that there is somehow this rape culture and that the schools don't protect them adequately and that all men are your enemies. And they set up councils at colleges to where young men, if you're accused of engaging in inappropriately aggressive behavior toward a woman in an intimate way, that you're assumed guilty and you're fighting for your innocence. So there's, and what this does for the American left, if you're saying, well, why would they do that? This enhances the voting base of the Democrat Party. It's no more noble. There's nothing noble about it. There's nothing right trying to help people. It is convincing young women that you're just a victim class and the government's here to rescue you and only the liberals will do it and we'll put new laws and new regulations. So it's African Americans, it's women, it is with respect to this immigration issue. Turning the issue of people illegally crossing the border, entering America, into a civil rights issue. I'm here, therefore I have the right to be a citizen and to demand everything citizens have, and I don't have to follow the law and I don't have to follow the procedures. I just get what I want right now, including government benefits. The entire trying to turn the entire 11 million, whatever the number is, of people who've entered America illegally, instead of a group trying to figure out a way to solve their problems, they've been turned into a civil rights victim group. We have victim groups growing every day, all by the American left, and all intentionally. And it's intentional because they see these people as future voters.
Well, and it's intentional to take our eyes away from what's really happening with these Islamists, with, you know, all these killings, all these shootings, not just around the world, but I mean, we had the, you know, the young boy Muhammad, the knifing in University of California, the Merced.
Yep.
I mean, that was an Allahu Akbar, where he yelled. We know he did that, and we know his writings, and that was his inspiration behind that. And you know, so the thing is, it's the left is, you know, they want us to look so. Be so internalized that we don't see that we are literally being killed from the outside by radical Islam.
That is such a great way to say that. You know, it's honestly, when I first heard people commenting about President Obama and the left and saying they're trying to instill, you know, dissension and anger and resentment, honestly, I you know, I'm pretty politically savvy. I'm a lawyer by background, but I tried really hard to say, now, come on, that's a very sinister motive you're attributing. But you know what? It is exactly what they're doing. And being true to our effort to try to go to break on appropriate time, we're going to zip off to our break and finish this discussion, though. We need to go back a few more points about Paris. Plus, I want to read you some of the tweets these self-absorbed children at University of Missouri wrote, protesting because America might care more, the world might care more about 158 innocent civilians, innocent people killed, rather than their microaggression gripes at University of Missouri. So this is Debbie Georgiadis, and our leading ladies here with me are Chris Davis and Lori Medina, and this Ladies Can We Talk at 660 AM. Come back. We have a great last segment, I promise. Come back after the break.
AM The Answer 660 AM The Answer.com. Bill Bennett agrees that the media are going after Ben Carson.
This is so trivial. Supposing that he made it up. Supposing he just thought at one point he might go to West Point and he'd get a full ride. And he might have gone there. So what? What does that have to do with his conduct in public policy, foreign policy, domestic policy? This is just crazy. Crazy.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings at 5, right before the Mark Davis Show at 7 on 660 AM. The Answer.
This is Michael Medved for townhall.com. Widespread public disgust with petty bickering and corruption in Washington has led to popular preference for an outsider candidate for president, not a professional politician. Americans long for another Lincoln, someone who's wise and idealistic and untainted by political machinations. The only problem is that the real Lincoln was a proud professional Paul. He first ran for the legislature at age 23 and spent his entire adult life seeking or holding public office. Our greatest presidents all earned deep experience in practical politics. Washington won election to the Virginia House of Burgesses at age 26. Theodore Roosevelt entered the New York legislature at 23, and his cousin Franklin became a state senator at 28. Even Reagan devoted 25 uninterrupted years to the practice of politics with masterful sophistication. History shows that to achieve success at the highest level, it helps immensely to have sharpened your skills and deepened your perspective with campaigns for lesser offices. I'm Michael Medved.
At the Restoring Unity Rally in August of 2015, 20,000 people gathered to celebrate the bond among Americans. A choir sang, "All Lives Matter," but mainstream media didn't cover the event. They didn't even share the pictures of Americans of every skin tone joining arms and voices proclaiming our unity as Americans. By contrast, there's regular media coverage of rallies of 30 or fewer people around the theme Black Lives Matter. These events get very different coverage because of liberal media bias. Left-wing media coverage is intended to convey that America is a deeply troubled nation made up of competing victim groups, which makes the mission of growing government control of society seem vital. Americans are tired of media bias and of the left-wing attempt to pull America apart. If you're tired of it too, keep tuning in to Ladies Can We Talk every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on 660 AM, The Answer. We talk truth about the goodness of America.
An attorney spokesperson. The Sentinel Group with principal office in Temecula, California is responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisements. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention, if you or a loved one took Xarelto or Pradaxa and experienced a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to cash compensation. Call 800-341-0345 now. Xarelto and Pradaxa are prescription blood thinners used to reduce the risk of blood clots and stroke. Dangerous side effects have been discovered, which have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Call 800-341-0345 now if you or a loved one took Xarelto or Pradaxa and experienced internal bleeding or were hospitalized for a serious bleeding event. Don't be a silent victim. Call 800-341-0345 now to see if you may be entitled to a cash award and substantial financial compensation. Time is limited to file a claim, so call 800-341-0345 now. Lines are open 24/7. Call 800-341-0345. That's 800-341-0345. 800-341-0345.
Our sister station, 94.9 KLTY and Dallas Baptist University Concert Series, brings you Toby Max, This Is Not a Test. Saturday, December 5th at Verizon Theater with special guests Brent Nicole, Colton Dixon, and Holland. Get your tickets right now at AXS.com. For special discounted group tickets, hit up GetGroupTickets.com or call 844-381-4751.
Learn a little something at the start of your day. The Mark Davis Show. Mornings 7 to 10 on 660 AM. The Answer.
We return to Ladies Can We Talk with host Debbie Georgiadis on 660 AM The Answer.
Hello there. Welcome back to Ladies Can We Talk. We're having that same trouble we have at the station every week. There's something wrong with the clocks here or whatever it is. 2 hours go by too quickly and we can't stand it. But this is our last segment on Ladies Can We Talk. I want to take a moment before we finish telling you some really exciting, important things about what's happening to America and what's happening with radical Islam. But I do want to take a moment and thank our sponsor. And as I tell you every week, I am extremely grateful that two really fine gentlemen and a company called GC Works stepped up and they are funding this show, Ladies Can We Talk. GC Works is a Dallas-based company and it performs research in advanced technology and delivers innovative approaches to the oil and gas industry. I am deeply grateful for them. I thank them so much for sponsoring the show. Okay, so we have not 10 minutes. We have 9 minutes, 8.5 minutes, and there are many important things to say. Lori's going to tell you one thing I thought was amazing. I hadn't even heard this until she was telling us about what someone general or
This is General Jack Keane. He's a retired four-star general. He's actually the author of The Surge. We all remember The Surge. That was the one that worked. General Jack Keane, he's on Fox News a lot, so if you're a Fox News watcher, you probably know who he is. He always comes across as incredibly authoritative, but, you know, while the whole thing was going on with the Paris attacks, they immediately brought him on to try to, you know, talk about this and, you know, talk about from a military standpoint what we should be doing, and he made such an important point that it just, it really impressed upon me that he said, you know, America and under the Obama administration, we have made it, our entire strategy has been based around a defensive stance against radical Islam. That is our entire strategy, being defensive. And up to this point, I mean, we've had skirmishes, we've had this and that, we've had, you know, we've had the Boston bomb, we've had this, you know, different things happen. We had the Fort Hood, but, you know, we've not had like a Paris attack necessarily that's
since
happened.
Since 9/11.
Right, yeah. Since 9/11 under Obama. But he's saying after this point, at this point, looking at now being behind a day after, you know, during the Paris attacks, he said, now we have no choice. We must have an offensive attack against radical Islam. We have to.
And Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, just noted leader, very respected leader around this country, would wholeheartedly agree. I read a quote from his article, which I will post on Facebook for us. It is, we cannot just sit back and try to orchestrate these other parties. We need to take the lead in this challenge against radical Islam. And then you're going to, Chris was
Debbie, I wanted to comment, you know, right after the deal in Paris happened, I noticed that Ted Cruz put up a Facebook post stating that we need to stop the resettlement of especially the Syrian mm-hmm. refugees here in our country in light of what has happened there. And I know that Claire Lopez mentioned Representative Brian Babin's bill. He's from Texas 36, the Beaumont area. And his bill is H.R. 3314, the Resettlement Accountability National Security Act. It's currently in committee. It's been referred to the Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Security. But this would be a bill that we should encourage the new speaker to move through the House. That subcommittee that it's in, the chair of that committee subcommittee is Trey Gowdy.
And oh, that's good.
It is. And our own John Ratcliffe, who is from the Heath, Rockwall area. Area yeah. sits on that subcommittee. And I hope people are sitting down when they hear this, but my own Congressman Pete Sessions has signed on to this bill. Now, you know, it must be election year. He must have some opponents or
something.
You think
he has opponents?
Yeah, I think he has four of them so far. But anyway, I just feel like tomorrow people need to call the Capitol mm-hmm. switchboard at 202-224-3121. Ask for your two senators' offices and then call your congressman and have them hear from you personally that we do not want to resettle Syrians
anymore.
And unvetted, you know, Middle Eastern, you know, refugees in our country, that it's time to get on the offense, like Lori was talking about.
Yeah, that Babin bill, he uses the word just a moratorium on all immigration. I think that's exactly right. We had actually a several decade long moratorium on immigration in this country. I remember the exact years, but in this most previous century, where we just said that's enough for mm-hmm. a while.
From the 20s to about the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I want to share, you know, one other thing from the Paris story, and then we're going to go to our tweets and quotes. But in Paris, coming up starting on Monday, November 30th, is the UN Conference on Climate Change. And this was, as many Democrats will say, that climate change is the single biggest threat to the security of the world, single biggest threat to America, which is astoundingly you could pull your hair out level crazy to hear from elected officials, because as you will hear on this show, if you tune in the Sunday after Thanksgiving, Sunday, November 29th, we're dedicating the whole show to the real facts about climate change, not the hysteria, not the non-science, not the pseudoscience, but the real facts surrounding climate change. So I raise that to say Al Gore, former president, Vice President Al Gore, and also author of author of the movement of climate change, where he just tries to get everyone hysterical about climate change. He actually had, of all astounding ironies, rented out the Eiffel Tower during the day, the same day of the Paris attack, the Paris Islamic attack on innocent people in Paris. Well, right there in Paris was Al Gore, rented out the Eiffel Tower. He was going to 24-hour live stream blather at people about climate change. What is so ironic is they obviously had to shut down the Eiffel Tower blather for broadcast, because they had an actual emergency. And it's very symbolic. It's like the real actual threat to the world, which is Islamic extremism, shut off the fake, you know, climate change hysteria, fear that the whole world's going to melt down, that Al Gore was trying to push and that President Obama tries to push. In fact, now there's talk about the fact that perhaps this climate change conference cannot happen. It is just ironic, because the left spends all this time on this fantasy hoax climate change thing, and then but the real challenge of the world shut down the fantasy on this past Friday, which I thought was kind of ironic. Okay, we have tweets and quotes. We actually have a couple of minutes left here to do them. I don't know if you guys brought any. I was going to share one while you're thinking about it. Okay, I watched, I'm painful as it was, I watched the Democrat debate on Saturday night. This would not be my favorite thing to do, but I thought as a good radio host, I would watch. Okay, this is, I swear, a true story. Bernie Sanders, who looks like a little bit like a crazy uncle at Thanksgiving, he actually said, this is a quote, climate change is directly related to the growth of terrorism. I mean, he says so many loopy things that the comment, I think the moderator didn't even know where to go with that. Just let him move on. But I mean, this is what the left does. Everything that happens is related to climate change. And that is, even for Bernie Sanders, kind of loopy. Did you guys have any tweets or quotes? I have a pile here. I got wound up today.
Well, no, I just think it's worth repeating that Trump, you know, when he was speaking, that he said, you know, I wonder if this thing in Paris would have turned out differently if there would have been a different, you know, gun policy in France.
That is, yeah, nobody has any arms over there.
Right.
This is, yeah,
right.
They couldn't defend themselves in the theater.
Right. And again, not that it's you know, the citizens' job to defend themselves from radical Islam, but we know ultimately as Americans, thank you to the Second Amendment, that we have the right to defend ourselves and our families at any time.
Yep.
Okay. You know, Debbie, I really don't have a specific one. I just was horrified when I saw the quote or the tweets of the kids in Missouri. And let me just be your segue right there.
Yeah, baby. I have them right here. Well, these were tweets before these kids. Someone must have gotten to these Mizzou students and said, you know, you're looking really, really out of line here. But these kids were complaining about the media attention to Paris because they wanted to keep on talking about their hurt feelings. Here's one tweet by Alasian Invasion. It says, now people are desensitizing hashtag Black Lives Matter and hashtag Mizzou for what's happening in Paris. Have you no common decency? She's thinking decency means that you can't talk about actual murder of innocent
right.
people because you have to
right.
talk about their hurt feelings. And then another one was, don't use the tragedy in Paris to try to undermine the awful things that are happening in Mizzou. Anyway, there are a bunch of them. They're just, they actually pulled them down. So now we are down to 20 seconds left. I'm going to tell you that we so appreciate you tuning in every single week to Ladies Can We Talk. Follow us on Twitter at Debbie Can We Talk. Go to the Facebook page, Ladies Can We Talk. Thank you to my buddies who are here tonight with me, Chris Davis and Lori Medina, and to my friend and assistant back there with the phones, Dan Bradford, and tune in every week to Ladies Can We Talk, and America needs you to be on track, speaking up for America.
Thank you for listening to Ladies Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiatis. To learn more or to contact us, go to ladiescanwetalk.org. And be sure to join us every Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on 660 AM The Answer.
Liberals and the media try to paint the Republicans as the party of no. But the way I see it, Republicans, or at least conservatives, are the party of yes. We say yes to families, to strong families. We say yes to educational choice for Americans of every income level. We say yes to life, to babies and to moms. We say yes to legal immigration. Yes to responsible healthcare system that honors the doctor-patient relationship. We say yes to fiscal responsibility, to actually balancing the budget and living within our means. We say yes to keeping America strong and safe, to defending our country from enemies abroad and by securing our borders at home. Every week on my show, I urge Americans to speak up for America and say what conservatives stand for. Because when we say that, the mainstream of America will be right with us. This is Debbie Georgiatis, and Ladies, Can We Talk?
People who can afford a LASIK procedure sure are lucky. Imagine being able to throw away your contacts and glasses. Imagine waking up tomorrow with 20/20 vision. Too bad everyone can't afford LASIK. Well, guess what? There's a company that agrees with you. The LASIK Vision Institute is now offering dramatically low prices on high-quality LASIK to make it affordable for everyone. That means you get the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology for a fraction of what others charge. And if you call right now, we'll schedule a free appointment so you can discover if LASIK is right for you. Results may vary. Call 1-800-944-5266. Even better, if you're one of the first 100 callers, ask about an extra 20%.